we return to the same gospel passage that we heard on Sunday. Jesus' description of himself as the vine, and we are the branches. I'd like to get to that in a moment, but first I want to say a word about today's first reading, the passage in Acts of the Apostles, where the controversy about circumcision comes up again. You might wonder, why is this coming up again? And we're going to be dealing with this for the rest of the week. Why did it come up again if Peter already had his vision of the big tarp canvas that had all the unclean foods, and then he was told, don't call unclean what God has made clean? That was the turning point for Peter. He recognized that the household of Cornelius, who was a Gentile, was also acceptable to God, and that Gentiles too could be saved and could receive the Holy Spirit. So you would think that question was settled already. And perhaps it was settled in the minds of a few, and perhaps it was settled insofar as Jewish communities of Christians and Gentile communities of Christians were still separate. So if you went to a Gentile place and evangelized them and they all became Christians, oh, great. Or if you went to a Jewish place and evangelized them and they all became Christians, great. But they're still separate. So it was in Antioch that there was this new phenomenon of a mixture of Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians, and that's where the name Christian came up in the first place. Some word to describe this new phenomenon, these two groups that did not mingle before. Well, once there's this intermingling, the controversy comes up again. And this is what we read about in the first reading. What about these Gentiles? Do they have to follow the law of Moses or not? Now, we'll get into that again in the days to come. So I'm going to leave that aside, other than to say the question really was settled, but not yet set. It was settled in theory, but not yet in practice. I mean, this is often the way it is in the church. Something is declared true. It doesn't mean that everybody accepts it as true. We know that it takes time for the richness of the truth to flow through all the branches of the vine. So let's go to this vine and branches image. It's a very rich one. On Sunday, I tried to reflect on how it reveals both fruitfulness and limits. A vine produces grapes. It doesn't produce mangoes or oranges. It doesn't produce what it can't produce. And none of us is supposed to be what we are not. We're supposed to be what we are. But for today, I'd like to look at it a little bit differently. Jesus describes the two different possibilities. Branches that do not bear fruit and branches that do bear fruit. Branches that do not bear fruit are cut off, and branches that do bear fruit are pruned. Those are the only two possibilities he gives. So if we're bearing fruit, we will be pruned. If we're not bearing fruit, we will be cut off. I try to make that very clear, because there is a sense, especially in modern times, that we should have two other possibilities. One, that we should be able to bear much fruit and not be pruned. I think that's the more common idea. What good is pruning? Let's just bear fruit. Let's just enjoy life. Why all this suffering? Jesus doesn't give that as an option. There's no fruitful branch that does not get pruned. And the pruning is for the very sake of bearing more fruit. The other option in modern thinking is to be a branch that doesn't bear fruit but still remains on the vine. A barren branch that can still claim to be a member of the church. Jesus doesn't give that possibility, but that seems to be one of the things that keeps coming up. In other words, someone who is operating on his own, he wants to claim to be united with the church, but he's really not. In the cultures before modern times, it would be unthinkable that anyone would want to be barren, that anyone would want to not bear fruit. And even on the most basic natural level, meaning bearing children, everybody knew that you're supposed to have children. That's just the most basic thing in life. And anyone who didn't have children was considered unfortunate at best, if not cursed. There are cultures that do not recognize a marriage until there are children. That's why the objection to celibacy, objections to a celibate clergy in the past were, you're not bearing children. That there's something wrong with you because you have decided not to bear children. That was so unnatural. It was considered by many cultures a bad thing. So celibacy was very hard to grasp in the past. In modern times, a different objection is raised because they don't care if you have children or not. They say, you're not having sex. You're not sexually active. That's a bad thing. So they're not thinking about children. They're thinking about sexual pleasure as if that were the necessary part of a fruitful life. Which is obviously less, it's further away from nature. Yesterday we were listening to a lecture, actually a conversation between two scholars, a video recording. And one of the scholars mentioned an antinatalist philosopher. I never heard of this term, or I don't remember hearing of it, antinatalist. Meaning someone who believes that it's not good to have children, that people should not have children. Apparently this is a philosophy that has gained some popularity now. I remember way back in the 60s and the 70s, when people thought that we were going to die from overpopulation, they were saying, you should not have children because there are too many people. The population explosion. I don't think people say that now because everyone knows there's a population implosion. Countries are not even having enough children to reproduce themselves. They're dying off. So population is actually on the decline, a demographic winter, they call it. But anyway, that was the idea 50 years ago. There are too many people. But now this antinatalist philosophy is that there is so much suffering in life that it's not right to bring a child into this world of suffering. It's immoral to have a child because that's not fair to impose so much suffering on an innocent child. He has no choice in the matter. So it's a pretty weird way of thinking. I mean, there's something you could understand. Yeah, anyone who suffered a lot can come to the point of saying, I wish I had never been born. Even Job said that. I wish I had never been born. But that's different than saying, I don't think anybody should be born. So there's something very radically anti-life about this philosophy, and it's exactly opposed to this image of the vine and the branches. As if the vine should have no fruitful branches. It doesn't make any sense. Well, anyone who's a believer, anyone who believes that the human person is made in the image and likeness of God could never be an antinatalist, because you would have to be against more images of God being brought into creation, and that would be to be against God. So the antinatalist philosophy has to be atheistic, or at least not Christian, Judeo-Christian. Anyway, I was reflecting on this strange idea of antinatalism, and I think it's connected to the whole contraceptive mentality, the idea that there should be prevention of new life, that we should be in some way or another against bearing fruit. That mentality, which has very pervasive influence in modern thinking, is goes against this image of the vine and the branches, and the idea that a vine is supposed to be fruitful. Now, it's not necessary that, and here I'm speaking as a celibate, I don't have any children, and I'm saying it's a good thing to, if a person's called to this way, that it's a very fruitful way. So there's more than one way of bearing fruit, of course. Having children is not the only way of being fruitful. There is such a thing as spiritual fruitfulness, and that can be even more fruitful than natural childbearing. We've been discussing a lot and reflecting a lot on the spiritual fatherhood of Saint Joseph. Well, he didn't have any children, not on a natural level, but he's spiritual. He's a spiritual father even now, bearing much fruit spiritually. Okay, now the central idea of Jesus in the image of the vine and the branches is not that there can be barren branches that remain on the vine, or that there can be fruitful branches that don't get pruned. His emphasis is remaining or abiding. The important thing is to remain connected, to be permanently attached to the vine. It's the only way to live, the only way to bear fruit. The fruitfulness comes from the vine, not from the branch by himself or herself. He's very blunt about this. Just as a branch cannot bear fruit on its own unless it remains on the vine, so neither can you unless you remain in me. So some living attachment to Jesus Christ is necessary for fruitfulness, spiritual fruitfulness. And he says it again and again. You know, you have to remain, otherwise you'll be like a branch that's cut off, or you're going to wither up and be burned up. And then he adds one thing here, that a last point I want to mention, especially for Anuin people. He says, okay, he prunes every branch so that it bears more fruit. You are already pruned because of the word that I spoke to you. That's good for anyone who ponders the word. If, without reading this passage, I had asked you, well, what prunes you? If someone had asked me that, aside from this passage being in front of our eyes, what prunes you? I probably would have said, well, suffering prunes me, contradiction, experience of failure, perhaps experience of being rejected, being criticized. These things are all like pruning experiences. Sickness, weakness is a pruning experience, all these things. And those are certainly ways God prunes us. Even strokes are a kind of pruning, as we know. But Jesus says here, you are already pruned because of the word that I spoke to you. So the word itself prunes us, if we get close enough to it. If we get close enough to the sword, it cuts us. It cuts away what does not belong to our relationship with God. That's part of why daily pondering of the word is so important and so spiritually fruitful. Because none of us wants to be pruned, not in it for its own sake, but we know we must be, and we can't do it on our own. We can't prune ourselves. We have to be pruned. So what we do as we approach the word is we place ourselves close enough to the vine grower, close enough to his sword, his two-edged sword, so that with his word he can cut away, he can trim, he can purify in whatever in us is not fully fruitful. And it's a very good, it's a terrible process to experience, but it's a very good process, a very fulfilling experience to have what is barren cut away from us and to be able to bear more fruit. So that's part of our reflection on the Easter life, the risen life, life in the Spirit, is to be continually pruned by the Word.